the following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 3, text number 13, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on July 3, 2011, in Bendigo, Australia.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sivishakonvitamscha.
Is it a Bhagavad Gita? So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 3, text number 13. Yagyashishtashana shante mudshante sarvakhil bishai bhunjate tetpakam papam yevajanyat makaranat. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment rarely eat only sin. The devotees of the Lord, or the persons who are in Krishna consciousness, are called santas. And they are always in love with the Lord, as it is described in the Brahma Samhita, 5.38. Preman janocharita bhakti velochanena santaksadaiva hridayeshu velokayanti. These santas, being always in a compact of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the giver of all pleasures, or Mukunda, the giver of liberation, or Krishna, the all-attractive person, cannot accept anything without first offering it to the Supreme Person. Therefore, such persons always perform yajñas in different modes of devotional service, such as shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, archanam, etc. In these performances of yajñas, keep them always aloof from all kinds of contamination of sinful association in the material world. Others who prepare food for self or sense gratification are not only thieves, but also the eaters of all kinds of sins. How can a person be happy if he is both a thief and sinful? It is not possible. Therefore, in order for people to become happy in all respects, they must be taught to perform the easy process of Sankirtan Yajna in full Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there can be no peace or happiness in the world. So, in this world, everyone's looking for peace. We had a carnival of peace last night. Everyone is looking for peace. That's a thing. Well, the trouble is people don't know how to have peace. That's the problem. They base their conception of peace on gratifying their material senses. If my senses are satisfied, they think they will become peaceful. There may be a temporary sensation of peace when you get sense gratification, just like scratching an itch. But then the itch becomes worse, and you never become satisfied. So this process of Krishna consciousness is a process of actually understanding who you are and basing your happiness on reality instead of unreality. You see, in the material life, we are basing our happiness on a false conception of the self as being the body. You're basing your whole conception of happiness on a falsehood. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. When I was a young kid in college, I had that realization. There I was working hard to make good grades so I could get a good degree, so I could get a good wife, a good house, a good car in the garage, some good kids, and a good coffin. The end. Just didn't make sense. The material conception of happiness is not practical because it's defeated in the end by old age, disease, and death. It's defeated. So why base my sense of happiness on a false platform? It just doesn't make sense. I knew there had to be something better. I just knew there had to be something better. So I searched for it, and I searched for it, and I searched for it. It took me many years of searching. I started searching in the fall of 1965, and it was not until the spring of 1971 that I really found it. When I found my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. You see, we require a spiritual master, someone who can actually enlighten us. That's what we pray. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gdanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shirave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. He has come to me who am in the darkness of ignorance, and he is forcing my eyes open with the torchlight of knowledge. That is the great advantage of hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. If one submissively hears, takes that message deep into the heart, then all the darkness of bodily consciousness is dissipated by the light of transcendental knowledge. One actually realizes their eternal identity as a spiritual being. And once you connect with that eternal identity in a practical sense, not just theoretically, but once you practically connect by your thoughts, your words, your deeds, in all times, places, and circumstances, you're a liberated soul. This is stated by Srila Rupa Goswami. Iha yasya hirer dasye karmana manasagira nikalas vapyavastasu jivan mukta sa uchate. One who engages his body, mind, and words in the service of the Lord becomes a liberated soul in all circumstances of material life. Doesn't matter if you're a monk living in the ashram, or if you're a traveling guru, or you're a householder, raising your family, working a job, or going to school, or a student. It doesn't matter what you are. If you can learn this art of how to dovetail your thoughts, words, and your deeds with Krishna, you become a liberated soul. You don't have to become a sannyasi to become a liberated soul. This is a big misconception in India. I am grihastha, therefore I must be in maya. It's not true. Who was the first recipient of the Bhagavad Gita? The original recipient, was he a sannyasi? No, it's a householder. The original recipient, the ideal example of hearing and being purified and enlightened by the Bhagavad Gita is a householder, Arjuna. So we simply have to see what was the mood of Arjuna. How, by simply hearing for a half an hour or 45 minutes, he became liberated. We have to study Arjuna and see. In the beginning, he wasn't accepting Krishna's proposal. Arjuna had his own idea of how he could be happy. But what was the result of his own idea of how he could be happy? He became dysfunctional. It didn't work. It did not work. He finally sobered up and realized that he wasn't going to be happy by this method. He finally sobered up and realized, Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava prachami tvang dharma samudda cheta shayan shandandishti had bruhitang me shashti hang shari mang tvang papanam. Now I am confused about my duty. I have lost all composure due to miserly weakness. In this condition, O Krishna, I am asking you to tell me clearly what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So when he took this mood of humble submission to Krishna, you see, then he came out of the darkness. He came into the light. If this was the turning point for Prabhupada also. He was a young manager of a chemical factory. And he was invited by his friend, Narendranath Malik. Narendranath invited him, oh, there is a sannyasi here visiting from Mayapur. I think you should come and hear him. I said, no. I've heard these sannyasis, they're all cheaters and rascals. they adopt the sannyas life just for the easy life, begging for some I have no interest to hear him on another sannyasi. He said, no, this one's different. He's a great realized soul. You must come. All right. So as soon as he goes in to the room, it's on the rooftop there that actually ISKCON has just acquired that building now. It's a wonderful thing. ISKCON has acquired that original building in which Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta in Uttadanga, Calcutta. It's been acquired by ISKCON. So we can make a nice tirtha out of it. We can go to that place where Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta. Actually sit there in that room, that place that's on the rooftop, where Prabhupada heard Bhaktisiddhanta for the first time. It's a very powerful place of spiritual potency. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, you can see, oh, you're English-speaking, you're trained in English language, therefore you should preach this to the English, Krishna Kanya's message, to the English-speaking world. And what was the first response? Oh, that's not possible. The first response of Prabhupada to his spiritual master, he rejected it. No. He wouldn't accept it. You see. So sometimes we do that. We hear from a spiritual master. He tells us we should surrender to Krishna. We say, well, later. Not now. I have to make money, become successful. You see. We object when the spiritual master tells us to surrender right now to Krishna. We object. You see. Just like Prabhupada rejected it. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Kuri is a very powerful preacher. He has Krishna Shakti. To be able to spread Krishna consciousness like that all over the, as he did, not an ordinary person can do that. That person has to have Krishna Shakti, the special potency of Krishna invested in him by Krishna himself. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he preached very strongly that it does not depend on any political situation. The prime necessity is to awaken the Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter who's in power. It has nothing to do with politics. Prabhupada was saying, because we are a dependent nation, first of all, we have to get independence. He came in wearing white khadi. You know what that meant back in those days? Instead of wearing the milled dhoti, he was wearing a hand-woven khadi dhoti. That meant he was a Gandhian. He was against British rule. He was protesting British rule by not wearing the milled cotton which came from the Birmingham or wherever they manufactured them in the UK. He wouldn't wear the milled cotton that came from the UK. He'd only wear the cotton that was hand-woven there in India. So he was very much into Gandhi's movement. Protest against the British, he said. In fact, Prabhupada did not accept his degree because he had earned his degree at Scottish Church's College. It was a British-tainted degree. He would not show up at the graduation ceremony. Even though he had passed all the exams, he refused to go and accept his degree because it was a British-tainted degree, you see. So he was very much in this mood of protesting the British. And that was his main thought when he went to meet Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. But he was completely turned around by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And as soon as he heard, he said, oh, this is my spiritual master. This person is my spiritual master. I met such a great saintly person. He was constantly meditating, you see. Actually, he was not initiated for 11 years. This was 1922. He met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was not initiated until 1933. But he took shelter of Bhakti Siddhanta within his heart. He took him as his spiritual master immediately upon that. As soon as his argument was defeated, immediately he accepted him as his spiritual master within the heart. Prabhupada said, practically he initiated me. There was no yajna, no recommendation, no formalities, just hearing Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, practically he initiated me. Of course, he got formally initiated 11 years later in 1933. So the point I'm making is, just as Arjuna first objected to what Krishna was saying, just as Prabhupada first objected to what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was saying, we have a tendency to first object when a great saintly teacher tells us to give up our entanglement within the material energy and to take to Krishna's service. We have a tendency to reject them because we've been conditioned to gratify our senses as the means of happiness for millions of lifetimes. There's 8,400,000 different species, and we've looped the loop innumerable times. Since time immemorial, we've been caught up in this rotation of birth and death, trying to gratify our senses and be happy in that way. And that's just our nature. We're habituated. And it's not our original nature. But it's our present conditioned nature to want to enjoy by gratifying the material senses. You see? But human life is meant for intelligence. It's not meant to be a stupid animal. It's meant for developing your intelligence to understand this process doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't give me the happiness I'm seeking. It doesn't do it. It just doesn't work. It's not practical. I serve this body so faithfully, feeding it, giving it sex pleasure, giving it clothing, giving it a house, giving it this, giving it that, giving it so many things. And all it does is get old, sick, and die. That's the reward I get for serving it. You see? Why should I serve such a master who rewards me with old age, disease, and death? Why should I dedicate my whole existence to serving such a master? It doesn't make sense. But that's what we do in this material world. That's how we're trained. The scientists tell us there's nothing beyond your body. That's it. You are your body and that's it. So squeeze as much pleasure as you can out of it while you can. You see? They deny the existence of God. But actually their philosophy is not scientific. There has to be an origin for existence. They say existence comes out of nothing. But there has to be an origin. You can't get something out of nothing. Where's a scientist who's ever been able to produce something out of nothing in his laboratory? You cannot get something out of nothing. Everything comes from something. And that original something must possess personality in order to produce personality from itself. Therefore, it's a person. It's the original source is a person. That is God. Or whatever you want to say. If you don't want to use the word God, you can say the original person or the supreme or the origin of all existence, the ultimate source of all energies. That ultimate source possesses personality. And that ultimate source is emanating us from himself for the purpose of enjoying loving relationships with us. That's why we exist. We exist to enjoy loving relationships with the Supreme Person. That is our happiness. To love God, that is our happiness, you see. That is how we actually become happy. And that happiness has nothing to do with your material body. If you can learn how to love God, doesn't matter whether you're sick, healthy, just like I'm sick today, but I feel great. You see, even though my nose is running and I'm a little affected by physically. But I'm ecstatic. It doesn't matter. My body is there. Just to be able to hear about Krishna, to talk about Krishna, to remember Krishna, to bow down to Krishna, to serve Krishna, that is the happiness for the living being in any condition of material life. We can remember God, we can serve God, talk about God, eat the remnants of foodstuff offered to the Lord. In this way, we become enlivened, we become ecstatic. So the whole world is missing this science. Therefore, Prabhupada has started the Krishna consciousness movement so that people can understand how to actually become happy. They're building all these brand new houses in this neighborhood, but is anybody happy when they're brand new houses? No, they're not. They're not happy. What's the advantage of having a brand new house if you're going to get sick, old, and die in your brand new house? Is it? What have you gained? What have you gained? Just like the houses there around the temple in Melbourne, this old, old neighborhood from Victorian era neighborhood. All the people who are dead and gone, when those houses were originally built, those people are all dead and gone. You see? Well, the laws of karma, they're taken somewhere else. The houses are still there, but the people are dead and gone. You see? So instead of simply being dragged away by the laws of material nature, why don't you learn to conquer the material nature? You see? Why don't you learn to conquer over the material nature? Human life is meant for conquering over the material nature by taking shelter of Krishna. We can't do it on our own power. That's not possible. The material nature is very powerful, but Krishna is the source of the material nature. It is his inferior energy. So if you take shelter of Krishna, you can easily cross over the material energy. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam which describes this. Samashratiye palapallava plavam mahatpadam punyajasho marare bhavam badiravatsa parang padam 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 yam padam nate sham. Shakespeare's just been defeated by Vyasadeva. I mean, who can write poetry like that? It's so beautiful poetry. Samashvataye palabhaplabhaplabhang mahatpavang punyamasho murari bhavambudir vatsaparang parambadam padam padam yadvibadam natesham. So nice poetry. Oh, Shakespeare can't get even close. The translation is, from one who has taken shelter of the bow, of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and who is the annihilator of that rascal demon named Mura. This vast, insurmountable material ocean becomes reduced down to the amount of water contained in the hoofprint of a calf. For such persons, their aim is the Parampadam, the Vaikuntha realm, not this place, Padam Padam Yadva Padam Nate Sham, not that place where there is danger at every step. This is a very dangerous place. Every time I get on the highway, I think about, you know, better buckle that seatbelt. You know. It's a danger. So dangerous place. Sometimes there's automobile accident. It happened to us one time. My driver changed, one of my disciples was driving and changed the lane without, forgot to look. He's on a, going like 70 miles an hour on the freeway and forgot to look. And they went right in front of a car who was zooming up. Kabam! That other car flipped over. Luckily, nobody was killed. Luckily, our car was only just slightly damaged, a little bumper bender, but the other car was completely total. I mean, just from a slight inattention. I forgot to check the side view mirror when he changed lanes. You see, it's so dangerous. It's so dangerous. One little moment of inattention can mean instant death. One little moment of inattention, instant death. Such a dangerous place, you see. It's material. Even walking, people die just coming down the stairs. They slip on the stairway. Maybe they're wearing some socks, and it's a wooden stairs, and it's a slick wooden floor. They slip, and they fall down, and they hit their head, and it kills them. I mean, it's a very dangerous place. People are dying every minute. People are dying all over the world. People are dying. Untimely deaths also, from accident. So it's a very, very dangerous place here. But you can easily cross over this humongous, dangerous ocean just by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. By taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, you achieve immortality. You say, how's that? I become immortal? Just by taking... Yes, because you reactivate your eternal spiritual identity. Right now, you have an eternal spiritual identity, but it's sleeping. Right now, your identity is reposed in your material conception. But when you reactivate your Krishna consciousness, then you're reactivating your eternal spiritual identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. So if you're a devotee, it may appear that a devotee is dying and a non-devotee is dying is exactly the same thing, but no, it's not. A devotee's death is completely different. Prabhupada compares it to the mouth of the cat. There's two ways to experience the mouth of a cat. One experience is the experience of a kitten, and the other is the experience of the rat. When the rat is caught in the mouth of the cat, it means death. But when the kitten is in the mouth of the cat, it means going for a nice ride. So for a devotee, death means the mouth of a kitten in the mouth of the cat. Krishna is taking me on a little ride right now to a new exciting place to continue my service to him. That's all. But for the non-devotee, I'm being crushed by the laws of nature. I'm being dragged to the court of Yamaraj for punishment for all of my sins. You see? So don't remain in the darkness. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. Is anyone writing the questions down while we speak? Anyone have written the questions now? I'll be opening up for questions soon. I don't see any questions being written down. Please write your questions down because I'll be answering them very soon. If you ask them. So don't remain in the darkness. Come to the light. Become Krishna conscious. This is what the great sages of India have been are telling us, you see. The great enlightened sages, the Vedic sages, the Mahajanas, Mahajano Yena Gatasya Pantha. They are telling us, you see. Who are these great sages? Svayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapila Manu Prahlado Janako Bhishmo Balirvayasa Kirvayam. Lord Brahma, Svayambhur Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila Dev, Svayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami, and Yamaraj. These are the great Vedic authorities. And these authorities, they are expounding this pathway of Krishna Bhakti. And if you will take this pathway, you become a liberated soul. In any condition. As a Brahmin, as a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, it doesn't matter what your position is in the social strata. If you will take the Krishna consciousness, you can become Mahabhagavat, a great devotee of the Lord. So now we'll answer some questions. If the truth is absolute, why there are many versions of the Bhagavad Gita? There's not many versions of the Bhagavad Gita, actually. There's only one, that's the version of Krishna. Sometimes the scholars give their own opinion, they present their own philosophy, and they call it the Bhagavad Gita in order to sell it. Bhagavad Gita is a popular book. So they will present their own philosophy and they'll put the name Bhagavad Gita on it. It's cheating. Actually, there's only one version of Bhagavad Gita, and that's the version of Krishna himself. What distinguishes Prabhupada's edition from the other editions is Prabhupada doesn't add or subtract. He simply takes the words of Krishna and directly presents them as they are. I'll give you an example. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 34. It's a Sanskrit. Now, if you look at you carefully study the word for word, you'll see that Prabhupada is presenting exactly as Krishna is saying it. Engage your mind always thinking of me. Manmana, you see. Manmana bhavamad bhakto, become my devotee. Again, it's clear. I studied Sanskrit in the university. And from my knowledge of Sanskrit grammar, I can easily see that Prabhupada is, whatever is there, Prabhupada is just presenting it. That's all. You see? Manmana bhavamad bhakto majaji, worship me. You see? Manmana madhyaji mad namaskaru, offer your obeisances to me. So it's exactly what Krishna is saying. Engage your mind thinking of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisances to me, and this way you will come the great souls, you see. 9:34. Gauge your mind always thinking in this way. How does that verse continue? Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So, I was sitting in the office of one religion professor at Rice University, a very prestigious university in Texas. And I told the esteemed professor, he was also wondering, why do you have another edition? I mean, they're all the same. Why another edition? As it is edition. He wanted to know. So I said, well, just hand me that Bhagavad Gita on your shelf. He had several there. At random, I said, just hand me that Bhagavad Gita. And we will see the difference. So he pulled it off the shelf. We looked at verse 9:34. It started off just the same. Engage your mind always thinking of me. And become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. Worship me. And then being completely absorbed in me, surely you will become me. Did you notice the difference? Krishna says, you will come to me. That's what he literally says. But the author, who had this idea that actually we're all God, that was his own philosophy, different from the Bhagavad Gita, but he wanted to present this idea in the name of Bhagavad Gita, that now that you just worship me and this way you'll become me. So these other editions of the Bhagavad Gita, they distort the actual meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. They distort it with their own opinion. If you want to present Bhagavad Gita, then present it as it is. Don't give your own opinion. If you want to give your own opinion, write your own book. We have no objection. It's a free country. You can print your own book and sell it on Amazon.com. We have no objection. But don't call it the Bhagavad Gita. If you want to present your philosophy, then do it. But don't call it the Bhagavad Gita. The world is being polluted by these cheaters and rascals who present their own philosophy and call it Bhagavad Gita. It's not Bhagavad Gita. You don't become God by bowing down to Him. You don't become God. You become a pure devotee of God. That's a big difference. How do I trust that whatever is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna Himself? In other words, is this an authentic manuscript or not? This manuscript is confirmed by great sages. A whole 5,000 years of great sages have who have realized the truth, who have personally seen God, and Krishna himself appeared 500 years ago as Lord Chaitanya, they have all upheld the authenticity of this text. And if you would like to confirm it yourself, you can do that. Follow it. I can guarantee you this, if you will carefully follow the Bhagavad Gita as it is, you'll follow this instruction manual, you'll reach a point where you'll directly see God face to face, where Krishna himself will appear to you and answer every question you have. Personally, he will come. So then you'll know, oh yeah, it must have been an authentic Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna's revealed, I followed it, and Krishna has now revealed himself to me, personally revealed himself. If every religion is preaching peace, why there's so many fought in the name of religion? Well, this concept of religions, plural, is a polluted conception. It's an incorrect conception. As soon as you create different religions, you're bound to have fighting. God did not give us different religions. Different religions is the invention of men with political motives. That's a thing. They're preaching a version of peace which is based on material conception. If we want genuine peace, we have to go beyond the concept of different religions. And we have to come to the standpoint, the position of religion is one, to become a lover of God. Then you can have peace. As long as you make distinction, this religion, that religion, this, you're not going to have peace. You will not have peace. I don't care how many interfaith dialogues you may have, you're never going to have peace. You'll never have it. Until you can actually understand that religion is one. Religion comes from the word religion comes from the Latin word religio, which means to reconnect or relink with God. God is one. How many suns are there in the sky? There's only one sun. But some may call it El Sol, like in Spanish they call it El Sol. And in Hindi, Surya. In English, the sun. In German, so many names for the sun, but there's only one sun. So there may be many names for God according to different languages, but there's only one Supreme Person. You see. And let's make it acknowledge there's one Supreme. And the process of perfection is one, to love that person. There'll never be peace. I don't care how many interfaith dialogues you may have. They'll never have peace. Yeah.
I was just thinking, can we say this, the number of religions is based on body?
Yeah, that's bodily conception. It's another type of bodily conception. These different religions. We have to go beyond the religions and come to religion. You see. It's only when you understand religion in its original pure form as one thing that you can have peace. I was raised as a Christian, so people say, why did you give up one religion and take another one? I didn't. I didn't give up one religion to take another religion. I became, by taking up, pure bhakti is a universal commodity. Pure bhakti. A Muslim can be a pure bhakta, a Christian can be a pure bhakta, a Hindu can be a pure bhakta. Anyone who comes completely, totally submissive to the will of God, they are a pure devotee of the Lord. Whatever name they may use, it doesn't matter. Atheists don't fight or lead to war. Wait a minute. Atheists definitely, they are definitely not pacifists. Oh, in the name of God. Yeah, they don't do it in the name of God. They do it in the name of sense gratification. The question is it better to be an atheist or better to be a pseudo-religionist who in the name of God commits so many atrocities? Which is better? to be an atheist. Actually, the atheists also commit this. This must not be a deluded thing, and the atheists are pure saints. They're not. The atheists are scoundrels, and the pseudo-religionists are also scoundrels. So which type of scoundrel is better? Actually, the religious scoundrels are better. At least they acknowledge God's supremacy. Yes?
Because atheists, like for example, Russia, communism, they were atheists.
The communists were atheists, yeah.
And they were more demoniac than... definitely more demoniac as
other... Stalin was an atheist,
yeah,
for example.
The whole system was atheist.
Yeah, we can't say that the atheists are great saints, these atheistic saints. It's a good point. Hare Krishna Gurudev, accept my obeisances. Gurudev, you teach in many countries where the people don't even know English. So you could please tell us how to preach to the people even though they speak the same language. But it's hard to make them understand about Krishna consciousness. Well, if you want to educate people and enlighten them in Krishna consciousness, it's really not difficult. You simply have to awaken your Krishna consciousness. If you're not very much awakened in Krishna consciousness, it's difficult to awaken others. But if you're fully awakened in Krishna consciousness, then you can easily awaken other people to Krishna consciousness. Not difficult. Because actually everybody's looking for Krishna consciousness. Everybody in the world is hankering for Krishna consciousness. But they're looking in the wrong place. You see. So if you actually have it, if you have that eternal happiness that everybody is seeking, people will be very attracted if they take the time to listen to what you have to say. They'll be very attracted. What is the way of engaging or concentrating on the Lord? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Why? This holy name, this vibration, is God Himself. It is called the Nama Avatar. The Lord Himself descends in the form of His holy name. So if you associate with His holy name, you're directly engaging with God. As you mentioned, this place is full of danger. How can we live in this world remembering this all the time, but at the same time remaining positive and carrying on in this world? In other words, well, it's practical. I mean, I know the highway is a dangerous place, but yet I get in the car and I travel in the car, you know. I know that it's a danger in the airline, too. It could be a terrorist, you know, in the... Sometimes there's a terrorist on the plane, and sometimes they take a box cutter and they slit your throat and they crash the plane into some building somewhere. It happens sometimes. So you just have to realize these things happen. You have to realize your existence doesn't depend on even the aliveness of your material body. You have to live in another dimension of consciousness. That my only business, my only duty is to please Krishna. And I can do it with this body, or if I have it, and if I don't have this body, I'll do it in some other way. So whatever Krishna wants me to do, you see, now you hear from your spiritual master. Your spiritual master says, okay, get married, raise a family, have a career, and do it for Krishna. Then you do it to please your spiritual master, you see. You don't do it to please your senses. You do it to please your spiritual master. By making your home into an ashram. So because you're doing it for Krishna, you're actually liberated from this world of dangers. Even though the world of dangers is all around you, you feel completely protected. You're the cat with the kitten, you're the kitten in the cat's mouth instead of the rat in the cat's mouth. See, the cat's mouth is very dangerous for the rat, but for the kitten it's a very safe place. So for a devotee, this material world is not a dangerous place anymore. He's fully protected by Krishna. This is very interesting. There's a verse like this in the Bible also, and I remember as a boy, I loved this verse. It's called the 23rd Psalm. I'll see if I can remember it. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, and thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table for me in the presence of my enemies. It's a very nice verse by a great devotee of God named David. He was a king. And he wrote very, very nice poetry. He encouraged kirtan also. He was promoting kirtan in the Old Testament. And we do the kirtan. He was promoting kirtan. From morning until night, the constantly glorifying God. He's a very saintly king, David. So he was saying that even though I'm going through the most dangerous place, I have nothing to fear because God is protecting me. I understand today is Sarup Damodar's disappearance day. Can you tell us a bit about him? I first met him in Atlanta back in about 1975, and I was really impressed with him. Of course, we had heard him on the morning walks when he was walking with Prabhupada, playing the role of the scientists. And it was really enlivening to meet with him. He was so jolly and enlivened person. He became a resident there in Atlanta doing some. He was working there. I think in the university, and doing his research for Bhaktivedanta Institute. So I was in Atlanta, and it was very nice getting his association. I remember that. He came back from India. He was with Prabhupada in the final days in Vrindavan. And he came back, and Prabhupada gave him so much mercy. You couldn't believe how much mercy. Prabhupada just wanted to give him all the mercy he could because he was going to be the one to lead the charge against the material scientists. Even when Prabhupada went to the toilet room to answer nature's call, he would take Sarup Damodar to the toilet room and keep preaching to him in the toilet room. Can you imagine? I mean, what kind of... That's amazing. Can you imagine your spiritual master has to answer nature's call? He takes you into the toilet room so he can preach to you while he's using the toilet? I mean, that's really, really intimate. You know, it's really intimate. A normal disciple couldn't dream of that kind of intimacy with the spiritual master. But he had that kind of relationship with Prabhupada. He told us. Prabhupada took him to the toilet room and kept preaching to him. He was so eager to just infuse him with all knowledge and potency for defeating the material sciences. So I was wondering, he came back and told us those things in Atlanta. It was so amazing, the stories to hear from him. Gurudev, the dreams we get mostly are from our past life, but we get dreams as we are a human being, but we never get dreams as a cat or dog or a tree. Now wait a minute, haven't you ever dreamed that you were flying? Has anybody ever dreamed they were flying? They could fly through the air? Anybody ever dream that? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it's not only human life. Can you tell us where in the pastimes of Krishna, in the pastimes of killing demon Mura in Krishna book, can you narrate? No, I don't remember it. I just know Krishna is called Murari for this famous pastime. I don't know that pastime. I really don't. But it must be really sweet. I mean, Prabhupada loved these pastimes of Krishna killing the demons. He just loved them. We would read Prabhupada, devotees would read Prabhupada's Krishna book in his garden in L.A. And Prabhupada would just laugh and laugh and laugh. He would just shake with laughter sometimes to hear about Krishna killing the demons. So this particular pastime, I don't know. But must be really a juicy one. Yeah, these demon-killing pastimes are really nice. Because we're demons. And we have so many demons in our hearts, and Krishna wipes out those demons. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakura has done a whole book about each demon represents different anartas. It's a whole detailed study of Bhakti Ananta Krum. The Vrindavan, all these demons in Vrindavan, they all represent different Anartas. So it's not that they're just allegories, they're real histories, but at the same time they have a double-layered meaning. So about Mura, I don't know. But I know that this name is very sweet, Murari. Murari. Any other questions? I've run out. The question well has now run dry. And actually, we've gone for almost an hour now. So if there's no further questions, we can move on to the next part of the program. Unless there's any more questions. Yes.
Right from day one, we've been taught that science is everything. You know, science, we've been educated for the last 300 or 400 years that science teaches everything which is correct. How to change gears now? That, you know, science has been wrong and it's not a materialistic world. There's something more.
What's he saying, Debbie?
He's saying that we have been compared about the science that everything is rolling in the earth. How can we get back?
The science that everything is what?
I cannot detail. What was the question? Please say that. Okay. It's something about the science that we are all now moving along with the science, so how we can go back to the...
If we're moving, we are moving along with the progress of modern science.
No, we've been taught right from day one that science is everything, and science is the truth.
We've been told from day one that just like the science is everything. Just like in the U.S., there used to be a saying, better living through chemistry, for example. Yeah, we've grown up with the idea that science is the savior of the world. Mm. That science is bringing us out of the dark ages. Yes, okay.
How to change gears now and go back, and you know, that Krishna consciousness is the answer, not science.
Thing is, we're not saying that science should be abandoned. Science is not bad. We should now perfect science, you see. Your science is going on, and there has been some benefit from it. But there's been so many detriments. We've actually gotten more detriments from it than we ever gotten benefits from it. Science in itself is not bad, but take that science and perfect it. That's all we're saying. Take your scientific method and use it to understand God. See, the scientists want to understand what is the origin of the universe. Why don't they perfect it so they can actually discover Krishna through their science, you see? That's what we're saying. Take your science and make it perfect. Right now, they want to speculate. Just like Dr. Stephen Hawking, he says the universe comes out of absolutely nothing. He's being applauded as the greatest scientist in the world. But he's not being scientific. He's not even following the rules of empirical science. Cornelius, are you a scientist?
Me?
Yeah, okay. We had a biologist the other night, so we had some interesting talks. We had a biologist in the room. But anyway, according to science, the empirical scientific method, there is observation, experiment, and hypothesis and theory, you see. You observe things, you get some idea, well, maybe it's like this, so let's do a bunch of experiments and check if it's really as we think it is, and then by all those experiments, you can draw some conclusion about how the material nature works. You see. But Stephen Hawking's, he says the universe comes out of absolutely nothing. Where is any one experiment that can confirm that something can come out of nothing? He's not being scientific. If you want to be scientific, we have no objection, but don't cheat in the name of science. The problem is they cheat. I had a neighbor, when I was running a preaching center in Norman, Oklahoma. One of my neighbors, he was a physics PhD candidate. And he was associating with the leading professors there in the physics department at the University of Oklahoma. And he told me that they were cheating. They were lying to the government to get more money. About their research, they were lying. So many things to get more money out of the government. The government men, what do they know? You give them some detailed report about your progress in the field of physics. They have no idea what it is. Only the physicists understand the language. Nobody else understands the language. So they give some inflated, false version of what they're actually doing in their research, so they get more and more money from the government. And they're cheating. In the name of science, they cheat. They're after name and fame and money. You see? So, such cheaters, they're being accepted as the leaders. Just like you can go on CNN and they will say that the universe is 13.5 billion years old, because the scientists say that, and it's repeated as the facts on CNN. So it's gospel truth. Our universe is 13.5 billion years old. But that's completely erroneous. It's completely off the mark. From the Vedas, we learn it's 155 trillion years old. That's a big difference. 13.5 billion versus 155 trillion. How far off they are in the darkness. Because they can make some microchip or they can invent an iPhone, that doesn't mean that they understand the origin of the universe. Yeah, for technical things, it's all right. A TV set or a microphone, or a flash, you know, power. Look at it, it's so tiny, but it's so powerful, you see. All right. We say you've done a very good job using technology, you see. We use it for Krishna. We have no problem using science in Krishna service. But to say because you can invent this flashlight, now you know the origin of the universe, it's ridiculous. We have no objection to the advancement of... I'll use all the latest technology. I have an iPhone. Because I can use it very effectively for my preaching work. It's like an electronic Swiss Army knife. I can use it for so many things. We use all the technology. Internet. I'm reaching over 13,000 subscribers to using the internet. It's also coming from the scientists. We don't say there's anything wrong with what they're doing. But when they say they now know the origin of existence, and they know that there's no such thing as God, is it? Because they can give us some gadgets, now they want us to believe that they know everything. That's not true. We have to draw the line there. We applaud their advancement of technology, because we're using it for Krishna every day. We have no objection to the advancement of technology. But when they say, but now because of this, now we can tell you the origin of we're going to create life in a test tube. You see? So now we become better than God. You see? You don't need God, you have us. See, we know they're going over that. They're going too far. Does that make it clear? Yeah. Any other questions? Oh, one more, okay. If Krishna gives causeless mercy, then why does he expect us to offer food to him? Why does he say it is a sin if we don't offer to him and eat it directly? You think Krishna needs your food? He's eating Radharani's cooking. I mean, she doesn't need a cookbook. Nor does she cook anything twice. Every prep she cooks for Krishna is brand new, never unique preparation, never been tasted before in the history of existence. Is it? Krishna doesn't need your food. But Krishna is giving you the opportunity, patram pushpam palam tayam yome bhakta priyachati tadaham bhakti prahrishtam mushtami priyatatmanaha. If you will offer me a leaf, a flower, food or water of love and devotion, I will accept. That is his causeless mercy. What is our food? It's practically like dog food. The caliber of our cooking is practically like dog food. But Krishna is so kind. That is his causeless mercy, he accepts it. That is, what causeless mercy that is? In order to liberate us from this material existence, to pull us back to our original loving relationship with him, he accepts our offerings. A It's like saying, why does Krishna want us to serve him then if he gives causeless mercy? He does give causeless mercy. Those who actually voluntarily serve him, they experience his mercy in one way, through the spiritual energy. And those who defy him, they experience his causeless mercy in another way, through the material energy. Everybody is getting the mercy of Krishna at every minute. Everybody is experiencing Krishna's mercy. What is the mercy of the government on the young student? To give him a nice university where he can get an education. That is the mercy of the government. And what is the mercy of the government on the criminal? To give him a prison where he can become reformed of his criminal mentality. Both is the mercy of the government. They could just kill the criminal, just put him to death. No, we'll maintain you. We'll give you a nice, proper food, proper shelter, so we can educate you how not to be a criminal. You see, that is the mercy of the government. The university is the government's mercy. The prison is also the government's mercy. So it is God's mercy in either case. Why does he say it's a sin if we don't offer the food to him and eat it directly? Because we're hurting ourselves by not doing that. You may say, well, why are you complaining if I water the tree by watering the leaves? Why do you tell me, here I am, I planted a tree, and I'm watering the leaves every day. Why do you tell me it's wrong? Why are you disturbing my brain? I'm watering the tree. No, but if you want to make that tree healthy, you have to water the root. Watering the leaves and ignoring the root, the tree will die. Why do you tell me it's wrong to water the leaf? So why is Krishna saying to offer food to him? Because that's the way we become nourished. That's the way you become nourished. You want to eat it directly? You're not going to get what you need if you eat it directly without offering him. That's God's kindness. That is, you must understand, that is the kindness of God. You understand this is God's kindness. He's telling us how to eat in such a way that we become nourished, not only physically, but spiritually nourished. Because the body is only a covering, it's not the actual self. If you only nourish your body and the soul within is dying, what is the value of your eating? It is God's kindness to tell us how to eat in such a way that not only is the body nourished, but the actual self within is nourished.
Did you also say that?
This is God's kindness. Yeah.
Why we sin also that what things doesn't belong to you, it's a thief. And another thing is that what you cannot give life, what right do we have to kill?
Yes, that's right.
That is why it is sinful. Is that why it is sinful also?
Yes. Yeah, we have no right to kill something and eat it because we can't give life. We have no right to kill. But Krishna says, I will free you from the reaction of killing if you offer it to me. Those things are in the category of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and grains, but not animals. Krishna draws the line. You cannot accept animals, meat, fish, and eggs. I will not accept. But you can offer me fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and grains, and I will free you from the reactions. That is God's kindness. It's like saying, well, why is God hassling me by making me do this? Why doesn't he be kind and let me just eat? No, this is his kindness. He's teaching you how to become liberated from the cycle of birth and death and come back into the world. Okay? One more? All right. This is the last one then. Why eating meat is not acceptable by Krishna, but eating plants And vegetables is okay. Krishna instructs us to eat only what we offer to him. We should only take the remnants of food offered to him. So first of all, why we should offer to Krishna? That's the first question to answer this. Now just imagine you have some roommate. And your roommate is very benevolent, very kind, very generous. And you happen to be unemployed. You have no income. But your roommate, he fills your pantry with the refrigerator, the shelf, constantly bringing all the wonderful foodstuffs for you to eat. You have the most, you know, you got everything. You got fruits, vegetables, grains, milk products, a full stock. He always keeps you fully stocked with the most wonderful eatables. And you sit, you cook your meal, you sit down, you say, you know, well, you know, thanks a lot. I really, really appreciate you giving me all this stuff, you know. You're eating away. You're not offering anything to him. See, in Christianity, you're taught to thank God for your food. Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate all the food you've given me, you know. You're not offering anything to him. What kind of gratitude is that? He's given you everything. You're not offering to him anything? What kind of person are you? Some creep or something? You're not offering anything to the Supreme, that person who's there, supplying everything? Is it? So if you don't offer your food to God, that means you're an ingrate. You're an ungrateful person who has no sensitivity, he has no feeling. This person has given me everything, I can't even offer anything to him, I just eat, don't give it to him. You have no gratitude. So that's the first principle. If you're a human being, you will offer to God. You will see, God has given me, I will offer. If you don't offer, you're not even a human being, you're just a dog. That's the first point. Now why not meat? Well, if you're offering to somebody to please them, if you have a friend who's a vegetarian, it's his birthday, you'll offer him a hamburger for his birthday, he'll be insulted. What is this nonsense? Don't you know I'm a vegetarian? Why are you offering me a McDonald's hamburger for my birthday? Get this garbage out of here. You wouldn't offer a vegetarian person meat. He'd be insulted by it, you see. Even on the airline, they ask you, what's your meal selection? They won't offer meat to a vegetarian. If someone asks for a veggie meal, they give a veggie meal, you see. So God is asking for it. Of course, we don't eat that. We just bring our own. But God is saying, I'm veggie. Give me veggie meal. I don't take that garbage meat, you see. So why you want to offer meat? Why meat is not acceptable? Well, ask Krishna why he doesn't want to eat meat. He can eat meat if he wants. In his universal form, he's eating meat. He's eating you, he's eating me, he's eating all of us in his universal form. We're all being devoured by the universal form. When Arjuna saw the universal form, so many soldiers were flying into the mouth of the Virat Roop. In his universal form, he's eating everyone. The Visharoop is a meat eater. But that's his Visharoop form, his original form, Govinda form. He's a dentist. So we're offering that original form, the original form of God. So, because Krishna says, he specifies of leaf, flower, fruit, or water. Why he didn't say mamsa? Why he didn't mention mamsa? Give me a leaf, flour, fruit, water, or meat. Why he didn't mention mamsa in his list? He gave his diet. Okay, here's what you can offer to me. Why he didn't list meat? Anybody have any idea? I'd like some, you know, give me leaf, flour, fruit, water, or meat. Why Krishna didn't say meat? You have any idea why he didn't say meat? Because he doesn't eat meat. So why would you want to offer somebody who doesn't eat meat meat? That's an insult. All right. So everything is clear. Everyone has understood these points. So it makes sense what I'm saying. But it sounds like some crazy gibberish. It means it makes sense. It makes sense what I'm saying. It must make sense because I'm repeating the words of the great sages. I'm not giving my own opinion. I'm repeating what I've heard from Prabhupada. He's repeating what he heard from Bhakti Siddhanta. It's coming down from Krishna to the Parampara system. So I hope it has made sense to you. I hope you can take these words deeply into your heart. And I hope that you can transform your life and transcendentalize your life by absorbing yourself completely in Krishna's service from now on, henceforward. Okay? How many of you are chanting japa? One, two, three, four. This japa mala is a very important thing. If you can offer your food to Krishna before eating and chant japa mala and read the Bhagavad Gita, those three things, that will save you. Start chanting japa every day, offer your food to Krishna, only eat prasadam, and regularly read Bhagavad Gita and Prabhupada's books. These things will save you from the cycle of birth and death. You can just do these three things. Prasadam, japa, and Prabhupada's books. A very simple way you can take up the pathway of Krishna bhakti by these three things. Please do them. So we thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.